brand new from Los Lobos, and Tin Can Trust. Hey, thanks for listening to What's Left. And please stay tuned for Music for Human Beings, which will be heard across the WMBR network, the stations that make up this network. This is WMBR Cambridge, 88.1 FM.
Being a college student can be very stressful, and when your work is done, it's natural to want to loosen up a little and relax. Those of us at MassCan.org, an all-volunteer organization dedicated to legalizing the use of marijuana, would like to pass on a little advice. It's important to realize that as an adult, you're responsible for your behavior. If you're under the influence of anything, never even think about getting behind the wheel and driving. People die that way. And if you live off campus, either with roommates or in a frat or sorority, remember that your neighbors are people like your parents, who get up early every day to go to work, and kids, who need to go to sleep a lot sooner than you do. Don't give them a reason to call the police. Finally, if stresses from school or relationships are making your life too confusing, remember there are campus organizations with people who are trained to help, people who can make things work out. This message was brought to you by your friends and neighbors at MassCan.org, proud sponsors of the annual Freedom Rally on the Boston Commons.
Reports are coming in from all over the empire, from all over the world. The government has not yet issued any statement, but there seems to be no question
that Radio with a View appears on this station Sunday mornings from 10 to noon.
We still don't know what it is or where it comes from, but there's something there.
You bet there's something there. Economic democracy, human rights, truth and reconciliation, and just enough music to get your mind and body in sync.
Scientists and military men are already agreed on that. Whatever it is, it's something real.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea.
It appears the names of the people responsible for this phenomenon include Mark Stern and Dave Goodman.
Here in the nation's capital, there is anxiety and concern.
Radio with a View. Sunday mornings from 10 to noon on WMBR Cambridge. No longer an unidentified flying radio station.
Yes, marhaban fi Music for Human. I am a Dr. Jalis Sakran, and I welcome you. The storm, both psychic and otherwise, will not prevent us from communing with you this evening. Probably. I am joined in the studio by Professor Levine. Professor, welcome.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Dr. Jalis.
Thank you, Professor. And may I say, I heard that recently you had reached a milestone in every professor's life.
Yes, indeed. I was granted the Dr. Jalis Distinguished Chair of Holiness in my department. And as a result, I am now actually referred to as Your Holiness rather than Professor by my students.
Your Holiness or His Holiness.
That's right, yeah. And of course, I don't require this title. Anyone can still call me Professor Levine.
Now, do you refer to yourself as My Holiness?
I haven't really thought that through yet. I think it might be a little pompous. So I think I would just say me. I, or maybe we, together, because sometimes I don't really feel that there's much separating me from other people. I really feel that I am but one limb in the human body.
Aren't we all limbs?
Yes, limbs in the tree of life.
Well, Professor, of course, it is so good to have you. I'm sorry, Holiness.
Yes, well, as I said, either one is acceptable. My formal title is now Your Holiness, but I still, Professor itself is still acceptable, and I must say it's really wonderful to be here in this newly elevated plane of existence, and I hope I can continue being here even as my soul begins to dissolve itself of its earthly bonds.
We also are pleased, His Holiness and I, to welcome Red. Red, welcome back.
Thank you for welcoming me back. Thank you for having me.
Red, of course, is a wanderer and a journey person.
I'm eagerly... This past week, I like to see the progression from the humidity and the sun and the heat to the mist and the clouds, and I look forward to the torrential rains and the lightning and the thunder.
It all sounds so moist. Well, it is of course good to have you with us here, and we also have Zorro the numerologist. Welcome, Zorro.
Thank you, Professor. It's good to be back.
Zorro, I understand that you brought a guest with you.
I have brought a companion from the windy plains.
The windy plains, of course. This is a very fortuitous thing, because it is today, I think as we all know, is the 10th anniversary of wind.
Yes, it's a good day for the wind.
I am very fond of wind.
And here he is, my friend, the traveler.
I am a traveler of many places. And it is funny, because I have always said that it is not you who travels, it is the world that travels, and you are stationary.
Indeed. Well, welcome to you and to this post which you are visiting. And to everyone else out there, if you would like to travel in and join us in our journey to make a stop here, you may call in at any time. The number is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Wind.
Wind.
Wind from the blue sky. Fly, house fly, horse fly, deer fly, chicken fly, cow fly.
This is the poet we had last week, I believe. And I must say, his poetry is as beguiling as I remember it.
Fly through the air with the greatest of ease, with a plate full of cheese.
I note a Susian influence.
Thank you, caller.
Excuse me while I kiss this guy.
In lightning.
Well, of course, the blizzard has not yet begun.
I believe it's actually more of a hurricane.
Well, that is uncertain at this time. I personally believe it is likely to be a blizzard.
I have heard is such that such transmutation is possible.
In the last episode, somebody complained of difficulty getting to the airport.
Indeed, that is right. I remember a caller who...
I do recall that.
...who did have difficulty.
Well, I had my own personal experience once. I was traveling to Sweden to attend a holiness conference, a conference on New Age Jewish spirituality. And I ended up being in the Cambridge area around 40 minutes before my international flight left, and I needed to rush to get to the airport. And so I flagged a taxi driver and I said, "Sir,
you're listening to WMBR Cambridge."
Station identification. I said, "Sir, get me to the airport as fast as you can. I will compensate you accordingly." And he did fly. I believe we arrived in the airport about 7 minutes after we left.
Did you play the accordion for him?
I played the accordion of cash, and I paid, I think, $60.
That's quite a ride.
It was a good chord. Yes, very fast.
Magic carpet
ride.
Did you
hit with the customary head of cabbage?
Of course, the bloody cabbage. I doused the cabbage in my blood first, so it would be more memorable.
I was thinking more taxi cabbage.
Ah. Mm.
But truly, the best way, the quickest way to get to the airport, and this should be obvious, I don't know why I have to call and point this out, would be to take an airplane. And if the panelists would respond in turn, I will take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Well, I would love to answer if there were a question.
I feel like the question was implied, a sort of conclusion question, which is, why do we not always take airplanes to airports?
Well, I think this was a dreamlike question, and to give a dreamlike answer to a dreamlike question, I would say that preferable to an airplane would be to simply fly under one's own power to the airport.
Or indeed to simply be there. So let's bring another caller in to be with us. Yes, caller, marhaban.
Yes, hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be speaking with you again. We spoke last week about my love for surfing, and I was just thinking about traveling when you guys were talking about it, and
yes, you certainly can't surf here right now.
Somebody mentioned the world moving in us, sort of, the idea of maybe the Earth itself spinning.
That was me, I believe.
Yes.
Perhaps.
And it occurred to me, you know, the possibility of standing still while the Earth is spinning itself.
Hmm.
Are you saying that we cannot ever stand still, for we are always moving?
Yes, that occurred to me, and what I was thinking about was how wonderful it would be, the possibility of truly standing still while the earth moved. You follow?
Yes, yes, I do. It is a good thing to seek stillness and to seek peace.
And I think it is inevitable that we follow the earth turning, and really that's what we're trying to get at.
Without, you know, taking into consideration speed and the length of time in which it would take to truly go around the planet one time, or many times rather, it just occurred to me, though, that if that was possible, to become so enlightened that you could just stay in one place,
well,
and therefore visit everything.
I believe that's a good goal. If anyone has some input, it is probably Professor Devine. Professor?
Well, I believe that the most important thing is to always move forward metaphorically with one's growth in life, in terms of exploring unknown possibilities. So I think whether one is moving or having the world come rushing to you can sometimes not even matter very much, as long as there is movement. So I think my perspective is that movement is necessary most of the time in reference to the external world, but at the same time, internally, one can be in a state of calm and relaxation and love and peace.
I believe I'm in such a state right now. It's very relaxing here in the studio.
That may be because we had our group relaxation exercises before the show, as we normally do.
Is that what that was for?
Yes, that was to promote calmness over the airwaves, because I personally believe that when we send our voices over these airwaves, we are affecting people, and that effect can ripple through the universe, ripple through the very existence of the universe, so that any mood that we convey can have far-reaching consequences. So it's very important for us to ourselves be calm and loving and peaceful.
What a wonderful idea.
And I of course welcome, you know, methods and ideas for achieving this sort of calm. I myself, I think I've mentioned several times, I like to concentrate on little feelings, little parts of existence. So for example, when walking, I think one can focus on the feeling of the ground on one's foot on every single step, and that attention, that focus of attention on that little sensation can really enrapture you and lead you to a more authentic and integrated existence with the world.
Yes. Your feet are so sensitive, and I enjoy walking without shoes as much as possible.
Absolutely, and there is something so raw and rich about that experience of putting one's foot down and feeling the earth beneath your feet. To me, it's similar in many ways to the feeling I get when I hear Aurora's voice and that same sort of vibration. I understand that she's entered the studio. Aurora, are you there?
I am here. Thank you for having me again on the show.
Welcome, Aurora.
Hello, Aurora.
Hello, caller.
This is Scott.
This is Scott. We spoke about surfing last week, and we were talking about traveling and walking with no shoes on. Your voice is extremely soothing, I gotta say.
Well, thank you very much. I was late due to a tribal humming ritual, which I could not interrupt. I was just engrossed. You must try this sometime. Just hum to yourself and to those around you.
Well, Aurora, I think that is a great idea. I think perhaps the seven of us might take part in this humming ritual now.
That would be absolutely lovely.
And here, of course, we should invite all our listeners who are listening to participate with us as well.
Now, I must instruct you all.
Please.
In order to do this properly, you must feel within yourself. You must relax entirely and find that note which suits you. Let it come to you. Do not pull it from your mouth.
I believe mine is in E-flat.
We will see.
So simply to begin humming Aurora and to settle on a pitch which is appealing.
Yes, and then let it go as you will, and you will find your emotions surfacing with the changes in your tone.
Shall we begin?
Let's do it.
Wasn't that cathartic?
That was incredible. I myself began with a hum of sorrow and distress, and somehow the hum of everyone else infiltrated my soul, and it lifted my spirit, and I ended on a hum of joy and beauty.
A true transmutation.
Yes, it's the only kind of transmutation I like, the true one.
Caller, how was the humming for you?
You know, that was a pretty... I've got to paint a little picture for you because I'm in my car, but I'm parked, you know, of course. I'm not driving.
That's very responsible of you.
Yes, right. So I had the ability to close my eyes and just take in your sound and try to blend my own into it. And I just felt this feeling of unity.
And that's exactly what you're supposed to achieve. Unity and reaching within. And feeling the others who are reaching within as well. So that together you may reach out.
Now, Aurora, that was actually quite harmonious and pleasant to the ear. But one would imagine that seven random pitches would not be so harmonious. Do you have an explanation?
Actually, when you are yourself, I apologize for the interruption.
Let the expert go, and I will interpret my own say appropriately.
There may be deeper meaning to it, but when you are yourself engaged in a ceremony like this, you tend to feel those around you not necessarily as pitch, but as emotion, as entities, as part of yourself. And so you find that it sounds harmonious and beautiful, but if you were to listen to it with a skeptical ear, it would sound just as cacophonous as seven random strangers.
Well, I myself believe that if we were not hearing one another humming, then our mutual humming noise would be less pleasant, and we, even those of us like myself who are utterly unmusical, we're able to adjust and find just that right contribution added something.
This is pretty much what I was going to say. As it begins, it is somewhat randomized, but after some time, the notes slide into some sort of slot with respect to each other.
And I did also want to point out that this kind of exercise is rather unique. Normal human interactions are usually turn-based. When we speak to one another and communicate verbally through language, we have to take turns, and we alternate roles of that giving information and receiving information. Whereas for dancing and singing and humming, there's a constant mutual continuous exchange symmetrically occurring across all participants.
And that's exactly that sensation that gives you that feeling of unity and belonging to something.
As I was humming, I was reminded of a very puzzling question for a lot of scientists, which is why cats purr. they generate internal vibrations that are very similar to what we generate when we're humming.
Now, do cats purr to one another, or just to humans?
I believe every time a human has witnessed a cat purring, the human did observe it. So it's
yes, but
we cannot observe a cat.
We could use hidden cameras, I suppose.
But
I find that would be a breach of privacy.
Some scientists have theorized that cats purr when they're injured, and the purring helps them heal themselves.
I would guess that it's actually a form of signaling of communication.
I have also read that there is some contention as to how a cat can purr. The mechanism is not yet clear.
Yes, and I did also want to bring up this other endeavor of mine, and I love humming, and we've talked about humming several times. And personally, I'm especially fond of direct mouth-to-body humming, where the sensation is not just aural, it's not just through the sound waves, but it's a direct vibration onto the body. And what's really amazing about this is that you can get various people to play different parts and basically achieve a symphony directly on your body. And I mentioned, I think before, maybe several months ago, that I would have my students train to perform various of my favorite symphonies directly onto my body. So each one would be performing the part of one instrument. And I could have up to 30 or 40 students each playing one instrument directly onto the body.
So how do you select which instrument belongs to which individual?
Well,
I was
going
to ask that too.
Yeah, Aurora helped me out there, of course, being an expert on the human vocal tract. She, I think, of course, being an expert as well on the human spirit, she was able to find the look into the personality and the characteristics of each person and select which instrument best represented some aspect of them.
Yes, that's actually one of the most interesting ways to understand a person through their voice, is to listen their similarities, not only physically, but through their actions, to understand, are they more like a drum set, or a keyboard, or perhaps a piece of wood being beat against a trash can? And everyone has those different aspects within themselves, but some are stronger than others. So you find that each person is an orchestra.
I am told that I'm some sort of sitar.
Yes, you're definitely a string instrument of some sort.
Thank you.
And excuse me, Aurora, is this evaluation done basically on the voice alone, or is there another aspect to the evaluation?
Well, the purist would definitely just base this on the noise completely, on the sound that the human makes and the vibrations. But as a non-purist, as a...
impurist.
As an impurist, thank you. As an impurist, I find that it can be easier and more delightful to find in the person their personality traits, to have them, and what I do is I sit them in a room that is covered in white paper. Just white paper, a single chair, and a single light. And I see how they arrange the chair, whether they stare into the light or withdraw within themselves, how quickly they become impatient. And these tell me all sorts of things, the instrument, the tempo, everything.
And Aurora, do you have a favorite instrument? Or an instrument which best represents your own psyche, your own soul?
Unfortunately, it is very difficult for a practitioner to reflect upon oneself.
I think actually that her instrument is the human voice, as an instrument, but I am no expert.
Your voice, Aurora, it reminds me of a harp. Very melodic and
Well, thank you
subtle.
Very much, caller.
I think you're right about the fact that it is harder to interpret yourself in terms of what instrument you might be, but better for those around you.
And more generally, I think it's often very hard for oneself to understand what's going on. It's just we don't have that kind of distance and perspective that's needed to objectively evaluate what's happening, and that can be difficult. That can lead to problems sometimes, and we don't realize that we're going down a certain path.
I think it's important that we keep in mind, sort of as Aurora said, to have a holistic perspective in our judgment. A thing such as the voice being judged on sound alone, it's frighteningly direct.
Well, there are so many things that can be heard through the voice. You can hear a person's emotion. You can feel the patterns of their aura. You can hear all of it. And it's amazing, the information in there. But yes, a more holistic approach can give you a sharper image.
Aurora, is it true also, if you found that most people do not like to listen to themselves? I'm sure that is an aspect of your practice.
Yes, it's very important to get a person, especially one who is very self-conscious, to listen to themselves and to learn to appreciate. The problem being that when one listens to one's own voice inside one's head, one hears something that is deeper and more fluid, and one does not realize that their voice is in actuality slightly different, and this can be very disturbing when hearing yourself for the first time externally.
Because I found in my experience that people can be very, very pleased with their own appearance, but it is uncommon. Likewise, generally, people do not like the truth about their souls, about their inner nature.
Exactly.
And if they meet themselves in a vision or in a period of great meditation,
or a restaurant,
it can be a very disturbing event.
But I think the same can be said when we start to peer into other people's souls as well. We often really only see the surface. We see their behavior in the context of public and other people. But when you actually start to understand someone very well, to see those deep motivations, it can often be a little frightening.
Well, if you would like to frighten us, the number is 617-253-8810.
I'm going to hang up to listen, but I just wondered if when I do, if you could touch a little more on, is what you're saying that perhaps people only show you what they want you to see?
Well, caller, I actually wanted to comment on this as well. And I believe that people see within themselves. There are two groups of people: those who naturally see those parts they love the most, and those who naturally see those parts they hate the most within themselves. Everyone strives, in the beginning, to be accepted, to be part of the unit, to melt into one another. And so we may expose parts of ourselves which are horrible, or parts of ourselves which are wonderful, and it's all mixed up because we do not realize who we truly are until we learn to meditate and to take things easily and to look deeper into ourselves.
Well, I just wanted to add a little of my own perspective here, which is that I do think it's possible to use one's authentic voice with other people, meaning it's the same voice that occurs in your internal dialogue. That same voice can be projected into the external world during conversations with others, and I think it's actually very important to be able to cultivate that ability to integrate one's internal thoughts with external communication with others. And I think there's very simple exercises that can help with this. One can take one little internal thought a day and just tell it to someone. And studies have actually shown that people who talk about serious things with their friends and their loved ones are actually happier than those who don't talk about serious things. And I think one way of achieving this happiness is just simply take an internal thought and share it with others.
That's a wonderful, wonderful idea, Professor, Your Holiness.
Oh, thank you for using the correct title. I appreciate that.
And congratulations. I did not have the opportunity yesterday to congratulate you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and of course, I thank Dr. Jalas for endowing the chair itself.
Well, I regard it as an obligation.
Oh, yes.
A happy obligation, I'm sure.
Indeed. A very merry one, but one I think the universe would not be harmonious if it were otherwise.
What His Holiness was referring to is actually a very good meditative practice. To spend an entire day, perhaps, walking around and saying the things that come to your mind instead of suppressing.
Well, I think, of course, one also sometimes does have to be aware of the effect one can have on others. So sometimes it is best to suppress those thoughts which will be hurtful to people.
Of course. But in a world full of strangers, what better way to learn which thoughts are wonderful and to be shared greatly, those thoughts which you would normally hide?
Indeed. And I find sometimes it is difficult to be comfortable with one's own voice in close proximity, but from within a car it can be easy to be very, very honest. And I will often use my horn to indicate that I'm grateful, or I will strike the horn and say, I appreciate your energy and the slowness with which you are moving through the universe and the patience you have.
The deliverance.
Precisely.
But Dr. Jalas,
the attention.
What you don't realize sometimes is not everyone knows Morse code.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed.
But
I believe subconsciously it is reaching.
Yes. But of course, it is very well known that once you put humans into a metal box, which is the car, and they can no longer see each other as clearly.
It's a Faraday cage, yes.
Well, people often stop treating each other as human beings. They treat the cars as objects, and unless you see, it's a very strange fact, but seeing a human face and a human body apparently makes one much more courteous towards the person.
That's exactly correct. And by creating this wall between each other, we are creating a barrier which dehumanizes each one of us, and we do not realize that the flesh and blood that is in that car is ourselves as well.
And yet,
it has been proven that metal does block spectral energy, which is probably the reason why this happens.
And yet, I feel that after shifting away from the rickshaw, the other motorists were more courteous towards me.
Now, what exactly is a rickshaw?
A rickshaw is a device for transportation where I hire an employee, an indentured servant, or some other person who I have found a way to control, and I have him lift the front of the device and run down the highway with me in tow.
So it's a very green source of energy.
Precisely. It's excellent. I think the greatest drawback of the rickshaw is that it is not unusual to be abused by other users of the highway. And occasionally to be detained.
I'm very, very sorry.
Now, do you normally choose those who are spiritually withdrawn and perhaps more obese and unhealthy to act as your rickshaw so that they may gain something from the experience?
I do, but I rarely have an opportunity to select between two rickshaw pullers.
Yes, I mean, I myself am a very strong advocate of the convertible automobile, the automobile which has a retractable roof.
Now, my rickshaw was convertible.
Yes, those are nice rickshaws. And I think, yes, perhaps one day we will, I don't know, sometimes we pull as a species, we pull towards isolation a little bit. We develop these technologies which allow us to separate ourselves from others, to sit in a room watching a screen by ourselves instead of joining the big circle of humanity.
It's what a terrible result. I often, when I was riding the rickshaw, would meditate and think to myself, it is a pity that few of my fellow humans have rickshaws. I wish, I would say, that all of us had rickshaws. And then immediately I would amend this wish and say that I wish half of us had rickshaws and the other half were pulling the rickshaws.
Ah, that does make sense. If you have a rickshaw but no driver, do you really have a rickshaw?
And this also, this is such an excellent attitude that while you meditate, you retain within yourself that practicality that makes you who you are.
Indeed, indeed. I have often felt that a beautiful metaphor for life is sitting in a driverless rickshaw rolling down a mountain.
Well, I think, yes, that's can be similar to skiing, perhaps.
Or sledding, I believe.
Sledding,
it is.
Yes. Yeah.
It's probably around as dangerous.
Yeah, now if only life were all downhill. If only it were, then perhaps...
It is true. I think that sometimes we should get off our rickshaws and pull it ourselves.
Yes, and I had this thought. My birthday is coming up. And, well, my son's birthday, actually. And he turns 31. And, yes, and the Jewish tradition, the Talmud, states that 30 is the age of strength and 40 is the age of wisdom. And I was meditating about this idea when my son was celebrating his 31st birthday, and I realized that the reason strength must precede wisdom by 10 years is that it is only through the exercise of strength that one attains wisdom, and thus that 1 year into his fourth decade is the beginning of that transition where the exercise of strength and resilience, personality resilience, not physical strength, leads one to a more mature and wise outlook on life.
And yet it was the wonderful scholar Xuan Gu who said that he who abuses the rickshaw may end up in a catastrophic pileup.
Indeed, that is the ancient reading of the saying by Xuan Gu, although I do enjoy Tyler's, the modern student of Xuan Gu, Tyler's interpretation of the statement, which was simply, periodically it is important to take your transport vehicle to the mechanic for an inspection.
Now, Tyler, of course, is a very well-respected interpreter of Xuan Gu, but I personally feel that the scholarly view, the scholarly approach to Xuan Gu is not fully appropriate. One can really only imbibe the wisdom of Xuan Gu through direct access with his spirit.
Yes, I have actually been witness to a reading his spirit gave. It was very enlightening, although quite faint. It took a great many of us, a dozen or so, to bring him back for a brief seance. But
perhaps at a later stage of enlightenment, all of us can come together and bring him live on the air.
Yes, that would be wonderful.
We should attempt that, I believe.
Now, I've also heard it said that the best physicists, instead of reading the words of Einstein to understand his theories, instead do communicate directly with his soul.
Yes, I believe I've heard of this.
Well, if you would like to communicate directly with us, the number is 617-253-8810, and we do have very little time.
Yes, but enough time for one final piece of wisdom given to us by a caller perhaps over the age of 40 or under the age of 40.
One more link to touch the thousands of us in the world, through the air, through the waves, traveling in the rain and wind.
I often find that the most wise pieces of wisdom are those which are unexpected. So I too welcome whoever may join us.
Perhaps if I concentrate very intently on the telephone lines, I can try to conjure up a caller. I'm trying, and I...
Or yes. Perhaps it would be wise to once again take part in a unity ritual. One which I enjoy very much is a ceremonial clicking ritual, which, if we could briefly all take part in.
I was clicking my disapproval.
Now, I to the listeners, I told Dr. Jollis about this ritual during a period of his life when he was feeling undue stress and feeling too adult and too responsible for many of those around him. And this clicking ritual allows you to take things lightly, to realize that life can be glorious and fun and wonderful. And through these noises we make, you cannot help but be joyous when you click.
But I do think that as one gets older in the years and attains this wisdom, we realize that part of the joy of life is actually accepting some form of responsibility for other human beings. When we only look within to ourselves, there's something very important that is missing in our view of spirituality.
It depends on the aspect of viewing within oneself. In my ideas of the world, at least my perspective, to look within oneself is to look through the whole universe, as it is all within yourself, just as you are within the universe.
Well, yes, and there is the perspective that I've heard spoken by some Jewish mystics, which is that one cup cannot fill the other cups unless it itself is overflowing. In other words, one can imagine one large cup in the middle and many smaller cups surrounding the large cup. And as one pours wine into the large cup, it cannot begin to overflow into the smaller cups until the big cup has reached its limit.
Is this something like a water clock?
Yes, and the idea is that until one attains the sort of authenticity and completeness, at least some form of it, one cannot begin to help others have that.
It's similar to the result of the hammering ritual earlier, that when one has achieved a strong pitch, that suddenly all of us can embrace and in produce perhaps not similar pitches, but pitches that are
harmonious.
Whereas if one has a wavery hammer, you know, producing the then it is difficult to align.
Well, I slightly disagree with that perspective, because I personally feel that nothing is ever in stasis. Everything is changing and changing. And the true wise person knows constantly how to adapt to the change without even knowing that they are adapting to change. They simply respond in kind. And so the true integrated group of human beings, when they hum together, they improvise like jazz performers.
Now, both of these perspectives hold water in the different types of humming rituals. In a tribal humming ritual from the South Dakota area, When you hum, you attempt to retain your pitch, to maintain that balance, to feel within yourself and to hear those around you but do not waver. And in the more Eastern traditions, to hum together as a group is to reach within yourself and to out to the others and to change constantly with them so that your humming is more like the flows of the river.
Well, I personally studied humming in North Dakota, and I think perhaps the northern perspective is a little more dynamic, especially that taught by the School of Fargo.
I believe it's influenced quite heavily by the wind, actually, yes?
Exactly. The wind was one of the first instruments that came to the human mind. Hearing the wind blowing, or whistling. And it can be such a lonesome noise to hear the wind whistling through the trees, almost like a cry.
And speaking of the wind, just to give our listeners a status update on the weather, we are not currently experiencing any rain within the studio. The studio is dry.
For now.
Indeed, all of us are dry and in true form. None of us are really here.
Well, my feet are slightly damp.
The only effect that the rain seems to truly have is the silencing of the bird orchestra.
But you know, I feel our clicking exercise was rather akin to this. We began to pop and crackle, and it became like the rain, and it did drown out the music a bit. It became its own music.
Indeed. I never really have experienced the rain as a musical thing, but I see how it could be.
I think you should try it. It's very worthwhile, in my opinion.
Dr. Jalas, do you remember the first time you beheld rain?
I do remember.
Do you remember the feelings that were coursing through your mind, the thoughts?
I do. There was an experience of great terror, because what a strange thing that water, which was a rare thing kept in skins, would suddenly appear in great abundance from the sky, to be vomited down by thick, angry clouds, all brown.
And this exactly ties in with your connection to different planes, for you realize the music of the rain, of the thunderstorm to be more precise, is one that is meant to be terrifying. So you have experienced, in your essence, rain as music, but you did not realize that it was affecting you because it was.
And it's always important to reflect on the duality of the situation, which is, I believe, that although the rain is quite frightening, it can bring around the growth of vegetation and all life through it.
Well, and this brings to us the feeling of comfort to hear the pitter-patter of rain on the ground. It all ties together.
One of my favorite instruments is the wind chime.
Yes, it's very difficult to play, but when it is done well, I think it is quite enlightening.
One must end always.
Well, I believe that sound means we're running out of time.
Unfortunately, indeed, we are always running out of time. But very much thanks to the Wanderer and to Zorro for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having us both.
Thanks also to Aurora.
Namaste.
And to Red.
Thank you.
Finally, thanks to His newly crowned Holiness.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm Dr. Jalas Sakran here on Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday at 7 on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Stay tuned for Hipster Happy Hour. Ma'a salama.
Number one,
cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two,
look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three,
cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four,
cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice, be legal, be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Hi, friends. Have you ever seen other people experiencing interstate highway ditch and thought, that could be me? Well, now, thanks to modern realities of speed and distraction, interstate highway ditch can be yours. Here's how. Next time you're in a car and the driver's driving recklessly, simply say nothing. That's right. Let them speed around corners and drift across lanes. Ignore that little feeling.